We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Yeah, I just went out there and did what Swaggy P do. Teammates played great, and we came out with the victory, you know?
I'm just trying to really get my NBA 2K rating up.
You know, it's 12:02 right now. If they want to fire me at 12:05, I'll go home and find something to do. I'll have a good day.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast, presented as always by DraftKings.com. Nick Whalen here with James Anderson. It is Thursday, November 29th, and the Houston Rockets are the second worst team in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I remember last night kind of following all the Twitter chit-chat about how the Mavericks were becoming the best team in Texas with that win. And, you know, that's definitely not something I thought we'd be talking about at the quarterway point. And we actually probably will talk a little bit more about the Mavs here in a second. But, yeah, I mean, that was a really cool game, at least the highlights that I saw. Doncic was doing some pretty crazy stuff in that one, and the Rockets have like six healthy guys, so yeah, that was a lot fairer of a fight than it should have been.
Well, I mean, why delay the inevitable? We can just talk about the Dallas Mavericks right now. Are they kind of becoming like your secondary team? I know you're not the biggest Bucks fan in the world, but you know, I think Doncic, wherever he went, was probably going to go, or was probably going to be where your fandom went. Is it fair to say that that's what's happened so far?
Yeah, he's just really kind of even surpassed my expectations. I thought that he would be this good, you know, at some point fairly soon. I just didn't necessarily think he'd be this good right away without having really kind of any learning curve at all. Like, he hasn't had, he's had a couple poor shooting nights, but it's not like he's had, just really bad games like every other night or anything like that.
He's also not shooting the ball that much. Like, his bad shooting night might be like a 4 of 12 game. You know, he's not chucking by any.
He's really efficient. Shots, right? He makes all of his teammates better. So you had me come up with 10 takeaways from the first quarter of the season, and my first one relates to Doncic in that I think I think everyone would probably agree that the Kings and the Hawks specifically have fairly bright futures, just sort of given their where their young cores are, where their draft picks are going to be, specifically the Hawks. I mean, they're probably going to get a top three pick next year. They have, very little bad contracts on the books. They have some interesting young players. The Kings, De'Aaron Fox is, having an awesome year.
It's a real shame the Kings don't have their pick.
Yeah. That is a shame. But, Bagley's been better of late than I expected him to be. And, Bogdanovich and Hield have been really good. I love those guys. So, that's a pretty decent young core. The Suns probably have a more hyped young core. I don't really think it's going to translate to wins anytime soon. I think Booker and Ayton are better fantasy players than real life players by quite a wide margin. But I think all three of those teams, even though I think you could make some cases for their young cores being pretty promising, are just going to always sort of regret that mistake in terms of not taking Doncic when they could have, because I just think I think the gap between him, some people I heard on the Low Post that like they're not sure that it's a runaway at Rookie of the Year. I mean, I think it's a runaway at Rookie of the Year.
DiVincenzo's been good. He hasn't been good.
I just think the gap between Doncic and the rest of these guys in terms of helping his team win right now is so massive. And I honestly think by sometime next year, you might look at him as a top 15 player in the league. I really think it's just going to happen that quickly for him, where the Mavericks are going to start making the playoffs, I think, ahead of schedule in everyone's eyes, and he's going to be the reason why. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be one of those things that kind of haunts those three teams, even though they have some stuff for their fans to be sort of excited about. It's just one that's really going to sting for quite a while.
My favorite thing about Doncic is the little smirk that he has. I'm sure you've noticed it as well. It really came out after he hit that 40-footer last night, and he just looked at the bench and didn't get fired up. He wasn't pumping his fist or anything, but then he just kind of runs down court with this little grin.
Yeah, he's a big smirker.
Yeah, and it's exactly his face is so young looking. He's still got a little neck beard, which I can kind of relate to. But no, he's been incredible so far. I mean, if it's not him for Rookie of the Year, who's even number two right now? I mean, I would say right now, obviously, if the vote was taken today, he wins it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's over. Certainly Ayton has been okay. Jackson's been pretty good. Gilgeous Alexander. But to me, those guys are still – there's a pretty big gulf between Doncic at one and then kind of the second tier of rookies.
So this actually takes me to my second point. I think Jaren Jackson has shown, even though it's only been 20 games, I think he's – just looks like he's going to be a special two-way player for a long time. I think that, guys that he just turned 19, guys his age just don't have the type of success he's having defensively this early on while also being a pretty efficient offensive player. He's not a huge, I don't even know if he's an overall positive on offense yet just because he's a rookie, but, I think he's gonna be fairly soon. Yep. I don't know where the ceiling is. It's probably, he doesn't have a Kevin Garnett type of ceiling just because I don't think he's that same sort of kind of explosive athlete. His movements aren't that kind of lightning quick, but I think he has top 20 player in the league type of upside, and just given his age, he's probably 3 or 4 years away from entering his prime, and he's already this good for a team that's winning games. So I think he would be number two for me, and he's the guy who I'm kind of the most confident from that class is going to ascend to being kind of an all-star caliber player.
I think he and Doncic are the two that are going to impact winning the most, but Rookie of the Year often isn't about that. Right. I think Ayton, at the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me if Ayton ends up number two in the voting ahead of Jackson for that reason. Jackson's numbers, what is he averaging right now? A little under 13 points, 4.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 2 blocks. Very, very good for a rookie, but not the type of numbers that really grab voters' eyes. But you look at per 36. I mean, right now he's barely playing 25 minutes a game. Per 36, he's at 18 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals, and 3 blocks.
Yeah, and he part of the reason he's not playing a ton is because of the foul trouble. Yes. But I watched like the entire Grizzlies-Bucks game a couple weeks ago, and he got into foul trouble in that one, but he like cleanly blocked Giannis on like 3 finish attempts around the rim and got called for fouls on him. And I think a lot of that is just sort of reputation. Like there are certain calls when it comes to blocks versus fouls that a guy like Rudy Gobert or a guy like Joel Embiid might get that Jaren Jackson's not going to get. And especially if you're, you know, going against a superstar like Giannis, Giannis is usually going to get that call. But, you know, once he, if he's able to kind of cut down on the fouls to the point that it's not a situation where every other game he's in foul trouble and get up to, you know, over 30 minutes per night, then, you know, I think it's going to be really exciting to see what he does. And I think that eventually once, you know, word starts getting out that he is one of the best rim protectors in the league, he might start getting the benefit of the doubt more often on those calls. So I think that's the big reason why his minutes per game is well under 30. It's just the foul trouble right now.
I mean, we were worried in a fantasy context that with Jamichael Green coming back from the broken jaw, which is what initially let Jaren Jackson enter the starting lineup, we kind of thought, you know, maybe he would regress back into the, you know, 20, 25 minutes a night. But like you said, I mean, he's playing 34, 35, 36 minutes when he's not in foul trouble. But then you look
he might be their third best player.
I think he absolutely. I mean, Kyle Anderson's played really well. The biggest blessing in disguise, and I wouldn't even say in disguise, just a blessing for them, is Chandler Parsons getting hurt. Like Memphis turning it around. I mean, they lost by 28 to Indiana on opening night, and it kind of looked like, oh boy, here we go again. Conley and Gasol might be washed. Gasol's been great. Conley's been great. But not playing Chandler Parsons 20 minutes a night and basically giving Kyle Anderson 30 plus minutes. He's one of the best defenders in the league. That's changed things. And I think, you know, Jamichael Green's an okay player, but even rookie year 20 games in, Jaren Jackson has been a bigger positive for them.
Absolutely. I mean, the Green injury was kind of a blessing in disguise almost too, just because you never know with NBA coaches, like what they're going to do with rookies and like how smart they're going to be about playing rookies. And it very easily, like if they're at full strength to begin the year, Jackson might have been averaging like 15 minutes a game for the first month. Like you just never know how that would have unfolded otherwise, and now they get to have their best lineup out there for most of the season.
I mean, it's still very early with Jackson, but like this does kind of have the feel of like a super 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 light version of like Tim Duncan to the Spurs, where, you know, like nobody expected Memphis to be as bad as they were last year. They made the right call, you know, not trying to make some sort of panic trade to replace Mike Conley, just take their lumps for a year. And it certainly looks like they took the right guy right now in Jaren Jackson, who can kind of, like, it's very rare for a rookie to be able to come in, positively contribute for a team that looks like it's going to compete for the playoffs, and then also, you know, 3-4 years down the road, kind of be the guy who you transition things to as your number one, number two option down the road.
Yeah, and Gasol and Conley. I mean, I kind of thought Conley might be able to play this well if he came back fully healthy. I didn't think Gasol had this level in him anymore. Like, I thought that we'd sort of already seen him start to decline from his peak, but he just sort of came back and is back in his peak. So I mean, I think he was what, like first in real plus minus or something like that when those got
released. I think
released.
He was initially, yeah.
I mean, that's every a day big, now. Big part of the reason why they're where they're at.
Right. Well, a lot of people just said, you know, oh, they were, you know, last year he was just chucking, you know, he didn't care just because that's how they wanted him to play. They wanted to lose games. And I was with you. I thought, like, I don't know, man. Like, he's sneaky old. He got a late start to his career. I don't know if he can play like he did 2-3 years ago. But, no, he's been by far one of the bigger surprises. And that was actually something I had on my list. So we can cross that one out.
Why don't we get to some of yours?
The Spurs might be bad. I think I picked the Spurs. They might. I'm not ready to say they are for sure, but they very well, their evidence is starting to mount, suggesting that the San Antonio Spurs are a bad basketball team. I was completely fooled. I think I picked the Spurs to finish third or fourth in the West. I had them third,
before
honestly.
The DeJounte injury, though?
It was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not to take anything away from DeJounte, but I don't think this is just a DeJounte problem.
No, I mean, I think you were too high on them, but I think that was a big enough domino for them to sort of knock them. I had them, I think, at like sixth before the DeJounte injury. Like, I still think that they would be a realistic candidate to be a 6, 7, or 8 seed if he'd been healthy. And it just changes that their defense is just, it's just awful on the perimeter without him. And the guys behind him, like Derek White, you know, had his supporters in terms of people that thought that he could kind of have a mini breakout season this year. That's not happening at all. And so you're giving those minutes to, you know, basically below replacement level guys.
Forbes, baby.
And yeah, I mean, who on that team, and they've been without Rudy Gay at times. So that's a big part of it.
That says a lot to you. That sentence alone.
He's their clear third best player. Yeah.
By a mile.
By a long.
Should they have paid Kyle Anderson, or would that have just been treading water? I mean, I think he signed like 4 for 32.
I mean, I think that I just don't know what the Spurs goal is anymore, really, because it sort of seems like they just want to be relevant in the short term. So in that sense, they probably should have. I don't think that, you know, I think committing money to Kyle, that much money to Kyle Anderson, when you already have a ton of money committed to other, you know, non-All-Stars, really kind of limits your ceiling. But, you know, if you're going to make that Kawhi trade just to try to get DeMar DeRozan, then do you really care about your ceiling, or you just care about your floor? That seemed like more of a floor trade than a ceiling trade. So maybe they should have re-signed Kyle Anderson.
I just thought DeRozan would be enough. You know, I looked at this roster before the DeJounte injury and thought it was better than last year. Maybe I undervalued Kyle Anderson. Maybe I overvalued DeMar DeRozan. Like, I kind of thought you're just adding DeRozan to last year's team when you didn't really have Kawhi. But LaMarcus Aldridge has been bad.
Well, not only undervalued Kyle Anderson, but undervalued Danny Green.
Yeah, and DeJounte probably as well. So
those were their three best defenders last year.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I guess maybe when one of them tears their ACL and you let the other two walk, that's a little bit of an issue. But LaMarcus Aldridge shooting 43%.
His regression, like, we probably should have seen a regression coming. I don't think anyone could have seen this level of regression coming.
Well, and the replacement for Danny Green, Marco Bellinelli, who was awesome for the Sixers after being bought out last year, shooting 35%. He's 32% from three. Like, they're a terrible three-point shooting team. Their two best players don't shoot threes at all. DeRozan's regressed in that area. Aldridge is completely abandoned shooting threes.
What's their move then? Do they, like, at what point do they explore stuff that could allow them to somewhat tank?
Okay, well, that's the thing. If you're the Spurs, is that even an option with Greg Popovich? Are you willing to tank? It has to go through him, right? Like, I feel like they would have to clear that decision with Pop.
They would.
One thing I thought of, and tell me if this is just ludicrous for both teams, but it lines up money wise. LaMarcus Aldridge is expiring this year. Swap LaMarcus Aldridge for Kevin Love. Just straight up.
Oh, man.
Who says no? I guess that's a better way to put it.
I think that, you know, I could actually see both teams doing that. Yeah. So that, you know, the Cavs obviously this whole time had sort of been hoping to turn Kevin Love into long-term assets, whether it be picks or young players. But I think that they would probably happily at this point just get out from it, like, and just accept that they're not going to get those things for him in a trade. So I think that would, you know, realistically help them.
I think if you're the Cavs and you're trading Love, you want assets rather than cap space.
Yeah, but so that's kind of the hold up for me.
Right, I don't know. And like, I'm sure you can, but you're not getting good assets. You can get some young players like they got Alec Burks, you know, those type of throwaway guys you just take a chance on. You're not going to get Brandon Ingram for Kevin Love.
No, but if you – yeah, I mean – I think that it would be a mistake for them to still expect to get anything tangible for Love in a deal. Maybe there's a team out there that if he comes back and looks really good, that would give him, you know, a late first or something like that. I doubt it. And so I think getting a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, maybe if you do the trade early enough, then you can trade LaMarcus Aldridge to a third team or something like that.
Flip him again before the deadline.
I'd, does Kevin? So then you're left with a nucleus of Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan, DeJounte Murray. I mean, they could use Love shooting for
That's
sure.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not a great trade for either side. Obviously, it's pretty underwhelming. Like, two guys who are probably on the way down from their peak. Certainly, that's the case for Aldridge. But yeah, you kind of solve your shooting issue. It doesn't solve your defensive issue. It probably exacerbates that, if anything. But you also have Love under contract for, what, four more years after this? So, I mean, I don't know. Some teams maybe view that as appealing. Others might not. But, I mean, San Antonio hasn't exactly been a free agency destination. So I think they're a team that might want that solidarity.
Yeah, I like that one. I think that would actually be fun for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather see Kevin Love on the Spurs team than just about any other realistic landing spot. And, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, if he's going to just sort of the way he sort of carried himself ever since when he had to ask out of Portland because he didn't like how Damian Lillard was better than him. Ever since.
Worst thing Damian Lillard ever did was hit that shot to beat the Rockets.
Ever since then, I feel like he's kind of due for some bad karma. And what's worse karma than getting sent to Cleveland for half
this Cleveland team? Yeah. So you then have this nucleus of LaMarcus Aldridge, Jetty Osman, and Alec Burks. Okay. Well, I'm off to a good start with my fake trades. That was one that I thought for sure you would just tell me to shut up and move on.
I
kind of like that one.
Yeah.
So going back to what you said earlier, you know, Phoenix, Sacramento, and Atlanta are kind of in this same group of, like, they're in the same spot rebuilding wise. And Phoenix is somehow the worst of these teams. But if you sat all three of these rosters down, like backyard baseball style, like just fan them out on bleachers and just pick teams, wouldn't the two Suns players go 1-2? If you were just
from
if
you're an NBA GM,
yeah, and you're starting your team, like, wouldn't you go Booker and Ayton 1-2? Or is Fox jump Ayton?
I might take Fox first.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, like, you know, for fantasy and stuff, like, Booker's awesome. I just think it might be easier to build around a guy like Fox. I think Ayton would definitely be third for me. I think that I would, you know, at worst, I would have Booker first, Fox second, and then Ayton. So I just think Ayton, just there's so many issues you run into when he's a guy that you're building around, because I don't know if what he does, unless all you're trying to do is win like 46, 47, 48 games. Like, if you actually care about trying to win a title, I think Ayton's a pretty tough guy to build around. So I would take Fox.
Went number one in the draft.
Well, I mean, we were saying this before the draft.
No, I know. You're right. Yeah, I mean, he's just such a tough player to evaluate. Yeah, I think, you know, I texted you last night after listening to the Low Post episode with Kevin Arnovitz that was up earlier this week, and they were discussing Ayton as well, and they were both like, I don't know how to evaluate him. Like, he's good, right? Like, he's objectively good, especially for a 20-year-old big man. He does all the things you'd want him to do. He rebounds well. He passes well. But at the same time, it's like, is that player now worth the number one pick in a draft the way that the NBA is going? Like, I don't really know that it is. It's not translating to wins, that's for sure.
Well, that's I think we can all sort of assume that that was an owner pick with Ayton, right?
And where did he go to school again?
And
yeah,
exactly. And I'm not saying like the owner should never have a say when you have the number one overall pick.
That owner should never have a say.
Right. He should never have a say. And so that was just kind of we're taking this guy. So you can't really fault, I don't really think you can fault the decision makers other than the owner there in Phoenix for that one. But
Doncic, right? Kokoskov, more or less, I wouldn't say he came out and said it, but it was leaked that he wanted Doncic. Obviously, he coached Doncic.
I mean, I don't know how you could coach Doncic and then say, I don't know about this guy. But, I mean, just that team would just be so much more fun with Doncic and Booker.
Well, I mean, my original point, and I think you refuted it well, like, there's certainly a case to be made that Fox probably goes 2 and maybe even 1. Like, Phoenix has the first or second best asset in at worst, the fourth best asset of those teams in Ayton and Booker, and they've made no progress whatsoever. Jackson's a lost cause.
How close to you, this, I sort of thought about this. I didn't throw it in my top 10, but how close to you, if you're drafting, let's say you're drafting third, How close is Mikal Bridges to DeAndre Ayton to you?
Not that close.
Okay.
But again, like maybe ask me in a year and, you know, we find out Ayton's just not that good of a defender. Maybe it gets closer. To me, it's easier to find another Mikal Bridges than it is another Ayton.
I don't know. I think Mikal Bridges, if he kind of develops, I mean, he hasn't played a ton and he's playing around these terrible players, so it's mm-hmm. really tough to evaluate him, but he might be just one of those guys that becomes like a sneaky borderline max player in like 5 years, where he's just such a good shooter from everywhere. And his defensive numbers, like his per 36 steal and block numbers, are really kind of insane for a player at his position. Yeah. So, I mean, his length is really crazy. I guess you probably take eight, and I'm just saying, like, to me, it's close enough that I brought it up.
In retrospect, the Sixers clearly should have kept Mikal Bridges, right? Yes. Like, he would be the perfect guy to kind of fill this post Sarge Covington trade void, this Fultz giving you nothing void. Like, that's the type of player that ideally, if you're Philly, you could just add to the roster. And now, you know, Fultz isn't going to give you, you couldn't trade Fultz straight up for Mikal Bridges right now. That would be laughed off the table.
No, yeah.
All right, once again this season, we have partnered up with DraftKings.com to bring you a RotoWire 6-month membership for free. Here's how it works. Go to RotoWire.com/DraftKings, sign up for a new DraftKings account, and make a deposit of at least $10. At that point, you'll get free 6 months of access to all the tools and sports on RotoWire.com. That includes our DFS lineup optimizers, all of our DFS tools, weekly rankings, premium articles, full season draft software, and much more. And you get all that for $10, which you can then enter into contests on DraftKings.com and win even more money. We're super excited to bring you this deal again this season. If you want access right away, just go to RotoWire.com/DraftKings. RotoWire.com/DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. New DraftKings users only. See DraftKings.com for details. Okay, one of the things I have on my list. We may have jumped the gun on the 2017 class, just judging some of those players, both good and bad. Yeah, you know, I think coming into the year,
of course,
we were probably a little too high on Tatum and Mitchell, who mm-hmm. I'm still fully all in on both those guys. I think they'll be fine in the long term. And then, you know, Josh Jackson played well at the end of last year. I personally was pretty high on Fultz, at least just in the regard that I thought he would be able to figure things out. Clearly, that hasn't been the case. Lonzo Ball hasn't made much progress. And now there's reports today, I think The Athletic had it out of New York, that the Knicks are interested in dealing Neal Aquina, or basically pulling the plug on Neal Aquina, who is, he has the second lowest offensive rating in the league among players who have played at least 500 minutes. Do you know who number one is? Somebody who you referenced to me earlier today, and you called him one of the worst rotation players in the league.
Alan Crabb. Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Frankie Neal Aquina has an 89 offensive rating.
Okay. So there are two. So is this tie into one of your 10 points?
Yeah. Well, okay. My point overall is just, I think I misjudged a lot of players in this class.
This
some
is
too
great.
High, some too low.
This is great because I have 2 points that can jump off of this class. But I think let's talk about the guys I'm not going to talk about first. Like Marco Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Dennis Smith, like those three guys were considered by a lot of people to be, you know, Ball and Fultz were considered by almost everyone to be top three prospects in that draft. Top four, maybe at worst on
franchise
Ball.
Players.
Dennis Smith, a lot of people thought was like the steal of the draft at number nine. Like, I think he's, you know, just based on him not having the yips that Fultz has or whatever, like he's better than Fultz, but I really just don't. Every time I watch Dennis Smith, I'm just like, you're never going to be on a good team.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he can still be a good player, but it's pretty clear. Like, Doncic has rendered him obsolete for them, more or less.
I know that Smith's a proud guy. Like, he's got a very high opinion of himself, and I feel like it's probably a bummer to him to, like, have this be happening where he's just kind of clearly, you know, a distant second building block for them. So, yeah, those three guys have been a huge disappointment. Josh Jackson was my favorite player in this entire class. That was one of my worst calls ever, an all-time
I think that's
bad.
Your worst call ever.
I'm
just going to say it.
I think It would be hard to have a worse call. I'm trying to think what like a worse call would even
sound
like.
I mean, if you just take the like the basic equation of like how high you were versus how bad he's been. And part of this is on Josh, you know? I mean, this is a two-way street. Look, he let you down.
I won't take 100% of the blame. I'll only take like 88% of the blame on this. Josh, I saw someone was talking about how like Josh seems like he's starting to make better decisions now that he's been passed by Mikal Bridges on the depth chart. Like, it was a wake-up call.
I think he's just playing more minutes now because they're trying to showcase him for a full straight.
Ooh, showcase.
Okay, so they
I think if I was trying to showcase him, I wouldn't be playing him more minutes.
No. Well, I think it's – no. So they also just very quietly waived Isaiah Cannon, who was playing like 25 minutes a night for them. Out of nowhere, just waived him yesterday, so they have a roster spot. I'm just saying.
So – I mean, guys that I think, so there's a lot of guys that, you know, we were too high on. And
I think Jonathan Isaac might be bad too.
Everyone was too high on. Jonathan Isaac falls into that for sure. But guys, there were guys that we were too low on other than like the obvious, like Tatum and Mitchell. Like, I think we were definitely too low on Bam Adebayo.
I love Bam.
Yeah. He's legitimately good. Like I think you could, in a year or two, he could be the starting center on a really good team.
If he was on almost any other team, I mean, we always talk about Miami having all this depth. It's not very good depth, but they have a lot of guys they have to play.
Yeah,
if he was on another team,
it's bad playing, depth, in fact.
Right, like if he could go be the backup center for like Detroit, or even kind of be like a part-time starter for, I don't even know, like the Spurs, go be the backup to Gobert in Utah. Like there are 20 teams that I think he'd be getting more exposure for, and like there are still nights where he only plays 9-10 minutes.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, he might already be a top 20 center in the league, and he just doesn't get to play enough minutes for that to be borne out.
Is he their second best asset?
Yes, easily.
Pretty easily, right?
Yeah. You know, then like John Collins, obviously, Jared Allen, obviously, OG Anunoby, who actually hasn't had that great of a year, but I think would still be pretty firmly in the lottery if this was redrafted. Kyle Kuzma, like Josh Hart, there were so many values later in this draft, and yet there were so many borderline busts in the top like 11 picks if you factor in like Malik Monk. And so I'll just take kind of a tangent off of this for one of my points. You mentioned Frank Ntilikina, and we've mentioned how, you know, teams like Atlanta. So I think Atlanta, Chicago, Cleveland, and Phoenix have just clear-cut advantage. Maybe Chicago would be fourth on that list because they haven't been at full strength yet. But like Atlanta, Cleveland, Phoenix, to me, are just the clear-cut three worst teams in the league, and they're going to cruise to bottom three lottery odds. The Knicks, who probably have the worst young core of that entire group of teams, is a little bit behind because they've won a few too many games this year, and they need to have a top four or five pick. They need to get one of those elite guys from that draft because Ntilikina to me is, you know, would he play on some team? Like there's a lot of teams he just would never play on.
He's shooting like 33% from the field. Like, so he's horrific.
He can be as good of a defender as he wants to be. Like he's not Andre Robertson good. So, you know, I just think he might be a guy that's out of the league in a couple of years. And then Kevin Knox, I know it's really early, but he's one of the few guys from like the top 10 of this past draft who has really sort of not looked great at all. And so the fact that they maybe missed on both of those picks, it's too early on Knox, but they might have missed on both those picks. And that's just not... They're in really, really rough long-term shape because I don't see them attracting a free agent of note. And, you know, if they're picking like sixth or seventh in next year's draft, that's a big difference between picking third or fourth. And I just think that that's something that I just sort of noticed when looking at the bad teams. I think the Knicks might actually be in the worst shape of any of them, even though they are in New York.
Well, they really messed up by winning three straight last week. They beat good teams too. They beat Memphis, they beat New Orleans, and they beat Boston in three straight games. Like, what are you doing? You can't afford to win any of those games if you're the Knicks. But we could play that same game that I mentioned earlier with, you know, the bottom teams. You line up all those players. Like, how many Knicks guys go in the top 10 if you're talking long-term assets? Like, You could throw Tim Hardaway in there, but he's 26.
Porzingis. I mean, like, obviously.
I'm not counting Porzingis. Okay. Like active players.
Okay. Like, I mean, Mitchell Robinson might be. Yeah, I mean, I guess you would probably still take Kevin Knox over Mitchell Robinson. I think it's close, but I don't really. Like, I think Mitchell Robinson's destiny is to just to be like Hassan Whiteside 2.0.
Yeah, I'm not. I want him to be good. I like watching him in short spurts. Like, I would not be calling him like the center of the future if I were the Knicks.
But like, that's how bad things are. Right. Is that he is one of their like top two or three young assets?
No, for sure.
And that's just awful.
Well, and these decisions compound each other too. It's like part of the reason you would think that they didn't take Shea is because they have point guards. They took Ntilikina the year before, so then you can't you whiffed on one guy and you have to see it through, so now you can't take the better
guy.
That's
how horrible decisions get made, right? And that's how
Suns have been doing that for years.
Like, that's why the Kings didn't want Doncic, is because they already had De'Aaron Fox. Well,
which turned out to be kind of okay, but not like you can't play those two together.
Yeah, guess what, like, Doncic isn't really a point guard. Like, right. You can have those two guys on the court together, and they're a lot of teams make those mistakes where they think they have a point guard and therefore can't take another point guard. And it's like the Mavericks were at least smart enough to realize, like, hey, this guy's way better than Dennis Smith, so let's get him and in case Dennis Smith doesn't work out.
So we've knocked out a lot of things on my list just by kind of jumping around. De'Aaron Fox specifically, he had his own bullet point, how good he's been, just because I was so down on him. Mm-hmm. I felt like I needed to personally apologize. LeBron's not really going to try on defense. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but there were those out there who thought, you know, this move to LA would rejuvenate him.
Not me. When I wrote preseason, this was going to be a chill year.
You were not one of those, but he has been worse on defense than ever. Like, worse than those times when he would just take weeks off in Cleveland. Like, it's really, really bad. And
he's worse than those times when he would take weeks off.
He's that bad. I've watched almost every Lakers game this year. It's actually kind of nice with them playing on the West Coast. I like just being able to just transition that right into bed.
Right.
But no, I mean, the Lakers defense has actually been sneaky decent. Like, they were top 10 earlier this week. I think they're probably just outside the top 10 now, after these last two games. But there's just going to be a limit on how good defensively they can be as long as LeBron's not trying. And as has been the case everywhere he's been, no one's going to call him on it. I mean, there's a story earlier this week, I think it was in ESPN, I think Windhorst wrote it, that LeBron is already calling the plays. Luke Walton is just like silent on the sideline now. And if he does call something, LeBron ignores it and runs what he wants. You and I talked about this over the summer. Like, LeBron does this everywhere he goes, whether it's Miami, whether it's back to Cleveland, whether it's LA. Like, he'll go with the program for a little bit. They'll lose three straight games, and then it's, okay, we're going to run everything through me. And
well, I think in Miami, like, Miami's the closest to him actually listening to a coach.
Yeah. For, like, years 2 and 3 in Miami, he did.
Yeah.
And they had an incredible defense, and they swarmed around everywhere and won 27 straight games and won two titles.
I'm really confused as to how they are where they are at in the standings, because they're 16th in offensive rating and 14th in defensive rating. Like, how – I don't understand how they're that low in offensive rating and that high in defensive rating. Like, if I was just blindly guessing, I'd say they'd be top 10 in offense, bottom 10 in defense. Somehow they're just, like, middle of the pack in both. But that shouldn't necessarily equate to – like, I'm basically saying I don't think they're as good as their record – necessarily indicates. Like, I think that there are teams in the West that may pass them as the season goes on, unless the Lakers are able to improve the roster, just because and this actually transitions into one of my notes. The Lakers young core kind of sucks. Like, it's
not good.
It's just not, you know, coming into the year, I think a lot of people would have said they had like one of the top three or four, I mean, definitely top three, actually, probably would have been a consensus opinion, like a top three young core in the league. A lot of people thought this might be a Brandon Ingram breakout year. A lot of people were kind of doubling down on Lonzo Ball, especially getting to play alongside LeBron James.
I never really understood that. Like, player like that has ever gotten better alongside LeBron? LeBron elevates your 10th, 11th men, not your second, third men.
He elevates your spot up shooters that can't.
Well, he elevates your Tristan Thompsons, your Damon Jones, your Eddie Houses, those type of guys.
He doesn't elevate your point guard who needs the ball to be effective.
And who has like 14 free throw attempts in 600 minutes.
So I think people are starting to like understand how bad Ingram and Ball are. But I also think Kuzma is to the point where he's overrated. Like I think he might be better than those two by default. But like he's not a good defender. He's you know decent shooter. He could be like your fifth best player. Josh Hart might be borderline overrated at this point too. He's not playing probably as much as
they've gone back to KCP, which has not been good.
So they're in a spot where I really think they would be fine just trading all of those guys in deals that make sense. And I kind of think that they need to look at trading for Bradley Beal and just sort of have faith that it's not like you're going to give up all four of those guys or even three of those guys in a Bradley Beal deal. It'll probably be two of them. And then you keep the other two and hope that that's enough with future picks and stuff like that for a potential Anthony Davis deal. I don't know how much longer you can sit by and let a guy like Brandon Ingram's stock continue to dip week by week to the point where he can't be the headliner in any deal for any top three player on a good team.
I mean, I don't know how many examples of this there really are, you know, these great young player for superstar trades, but like how often have they not worked out? Like I think we're gonna, as the season progresses, we're gonna keep looking back and say like, how could they not deal Brandon Ingram? How could you not be willing to part with this guy for Kawhi Leonard? You know, I mean, like Ingram is the guy I would want to get rid of most out of the three that you mentioned.
Now Ingram seems he doesn't seem like a Spurs guy. Like are we sure that they were ever willing to do a Kawhi deal that centered around
look what they took back. They took DeRozan.
I think the Spurs are kind of behaving moronically right now, where I think they that package appealed to them.
Like you think it keeps you better in the present?
I just think that the young players they were getting offered were not Spurs guys. They just weren't guys that like the Spurs have ever gone after, whether it be in a trade or in a draft.
I agree. True. I mean, Jakob Poeltl is a Spurs guy.
Yes, yes. They're work ethic, basketball IQ guys. Like that's what they go after.
I agree, but I think if Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram were on the table, I can't imagine I don't see how you can turn that down. I know they're not Spurs guys. I agree with you on that, but I just think there's too much talent, especially how they were viewed
at
the time.
But also, you definitely could have gotten Paul George. The Pacers would have happily
Paul George has been awesome. Paul George has been a top 10 player, top 15 player for sure.
I think he's been a top 10 player.
Yeah.
You could have gotten Paul George for probably one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know?
It's going to keep looking worse and worse. And it all feels like it's all building to them trading them for like a tier two or three star, like Bradley Beal or somebody like that. Where
I think you should just do that now because
I've seen enough out of Ingram. That guy's not good.
I don't think any combination of those four guys is going to be enough to beat a Boston Celtics offer on Anthony Davis. So, I mean,
I don't know. Well, is Boston giving up Tatum? If so, then you're right. Tatum is that much better of an asset than any of those guys. But if they're not giving up Tatum, their assets have kind of depreciated too.
That's true. I mean, they at least have valuable picks to trade.
True.
Which the Lakers don't have.
I
don't know. I think that the Anthony Davis pipe dream is just almost more of a pipe dream even than the ones where they sort of passed on. They're like, well, we'll get Paul George when he's a free agent, or well, we can't risk trading these guys for Kawhi Leonard. Like we might just re-sign him or sign him when he's a free agent. Like the Anthony Davis one, maybe he's a better bet to sign there as a free agent than those other two guys were, but we just keep seeing more and more the guy re-signs with the team he gets traded to. Right. Like I think Kawhi's going to re-sign in Toronto. I think that they're just kind of holding onto these assets while they're depreciating in front of their face. And Bradley Beal would just be such a perfect option next to LeBron. The fact that he's got this team where he's got it with the players he's got. Mm-hmm. Like I just think if you cashed a couple of those guys out for Bradley Beal, then all of a sudden you might have a real, real run at the two seed. Right. And
well, I mean, that's what I said to you earlier today is like, I think the Lakers timeline with this deal keeps getting extended because of how shaky a lot of these other teams have been in the West. Like right now, like you said, they're 11-9. They're three games out of first place in the Western Conference. So you don't I think if you said the Lakers are 11-9 through 20 games, 2 months ago, if you told me that, you'd say, like, oh my God, things have gone terribly. They're probably in 10th place right now. But the fact that they don't really have to panic quite yet. Eventually things will kind of even out. And I think if they keep playing like this, they'll fall further and further behind, and that'll kind of force their hand. But they haven't had to make a panic deal quite yet. And obviously getting LeBron James kind of covers up a lot of this, but the Lakers may have, I wouldn't say whiffed, but they kind of went like 1-for-3. If you combine all of their number two overall picks, they picked second 3 years in a row. One of those guys is playing for the Brooklyn Nets. One of them is Brandon Ingram, who we're talking about depreciating every single day. And the other one's Lonzo Ball, who, you know, is a fine player. Like, Ingram and Ball aren't busts, but they're not the type of talent you expect to get at number two overall.
And I will say, like, in fairness to Ball and Ingram, like, D'Angelo Russell looks like he's having a better season than them. But I think it's a lot easier to have a better season when you're the number one option or number two option on the Nets and you're not playing with LeBron James. And if you're like Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, like, it's tough to be a developing young player and play next to LeBron James.
For sure.
It's just really not an ideal developmental situation. So, I mean, it's tough, but I guess this, I briefly mentioned Bradley Beal. One of my points is that the bottom of the East is so bad that I actually think this Wizards team might make the playoffs, just because I don't think they're going to have success finding trade partners for any of these guys. Like, I definitely don't think John Wall is getting traded this season. I think if an Otto Porter trade was out there that they liked, it would probably have already happened. And Bradley Beal, I think that they are open to trading him. I just don't think that the teams with the sort of obvious assets are making a hard enough run at him. And so I think they might just keep these guys and get like the 7th or the 8th seed in the East,
right,
even though they all hate each other.
Well, yeah, 2 weeks ago it was, you know, the narrative is like, this team might kill each other. Like, we might have another guns in the locker room 2.0 situation. But like, all of a sudden, like, if the chips are down right now, I would bet on the Wizards to make the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, they're like a game and a half out of out of the eight all of a sudden. Like Orlando's clearly not better than them.
The teams after the Pacers, like, there's a clear top five that are good.
They might host a playoff series.
All the teams that are like the Hornets are like the clear sixth
the
best team
terrible.
in the East, though.
For Kemba.
Like, it's like the Pistons, the Magic, the Heat. The Heat are terrible.
Heat are real bad.
Those teams aren't necessarily better than this Wizards team, even if they all hate each other.
Yeah, so they're in a weird spot. I mean, and it's really tough. You know, I came up with all these fake trades the other night just for fun, and I don't even know how, like, some teams might actually give something up for John Wall. Do the Wizards just view this as a salary dump? Like, we have no idea. Like, you kind of try to use the Blake Griffin trade as a map, and that was a salary dump by the Clippers, but they also got Tobias Harris back. And
that was an
their
awesome
best
trade.
He's their best player
now.
That
was such a good trade.
Right. So I don't know what the roadmap is, but it's, as long as they keep hanging around the 7, 8, 9 in the East, they don't really have to make a trade. I don't think they want to.
Well, yeah, it's just the guys they want to trade are guys that other teams don't want. And like, it would be stupid, I think, to trade Bradley Beal just to trade Bradley Beal. If you're getting kind of, I mean, like, would you trade Bradley Beal for a deal centered around, like, anyone on the Sixers other than their big three? Like, anyone on the Lakers? Like,
well, I don't know. Like, if the Lakers offered Ingram and Ball or Ingram and Kuzma for Beal, it's that, I don't know.
I probably,
because the Wizards do need depth. They've never had a good bench.
I think the Wizards probably would end up doing that. I think the Lakers would be smart to do that deal as well. So I just don't know if the deal's out there that makes sense for them to trade Beal. And at that point, you probably make the playoffs. So it's a testament to just how horrible the sucky seven actually is.
A couple other trade notes we should say. There was a report yesterday that the 76ers, this is a real report, have alerted teams that TJ McConnell is no longer available. They will not be fielding offers for TJ McConnell. So just in case you can scrap all your fake TJ McConnell trades, they will be keeping him. They need him. With Fultz away from the team, apparently. I'm sure they're really upset that news got out. Kyle Korver was very quietly dealt to the Utah Jazz yesterday for Alec Burks and 2 second rounders. Kind of a weird move. I like it for the Jazz, I guess. I mean, at this point, Korver's 37, can't really play D. He tries hard defensively, so I guess there's that. But
they needed shooting.
They needed something.
I mean, they're
Well, Burks was not playing well.
Burks sucks.
Okay.
Joe Ingles was like their best shooter, and then their second best shooter was like Donovan Mitchell, I guess.
But Jay Crowder?
Yeah, I mean, they needed 3-point shooting, and like that's probably the best team to hide Korver's defensive ineptitude, because you have Rudy Gobert back mm-hmm. there protecting the guys that blow by him. So it makes sense to me. I thought that was a smart trade for both sides. Getting 2 seconds for him is that's as good as you're going to do.
Yeah, I think you probably could have got a protected first from somebody that ultimately would have turned into 2 seconds or 1 second. Right. So yeah, I think that was fine. Kind of a weird move by the Cavs to get Burks, because you already have a bunch of bad shooting guards.
He's a great Cav.
He's arguably in a worse spot than he was before.
He's like a poor man's Jordan Clarkson.
Exactly, yeah. One of the things I have on my list, we kind of touched on Davis, but like I think it's looking more and more like they're going to have to trade Davis. They got off to this kind of fun start. They've fallen back down to earth all of a sudden. I mean, like, weirdly enough, like, everybody's playing pretty well. Like, Holiday's kind of picked up where he left off last year. Davis has been fine. Mirotić or Mirotić and Julius Randle have both been good, but it just doesn't really seem like it's enough. And if that's not enough, I don't know what is, unless you do some sort of, you know, John Wall type of Hail Mary trade. But even that, you know, people seem to think like there's this.
I think that would be stupid.
There's
a
connection between.
I think that would
two.
Actually make them worse.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think that, you know, maybe if you could work something out for, I think Danny LaRue floated this on the Dunktown podcast, if you could work something out for Otto Porter that involves like Solomon Hill going back and
Porter's, you know, another guy. Like, is Washington trying to get out from under that money, or are they trying to get value back?
I don't even know if they know. I think that they'd probably like to get like some sort of small asset back with the matching money, but I'm not ready to give up on this Pelicans team being a team that wins a playoff series this year. I know that they've kind of faded. I just think that they need more time, I think, to kind of mesh some of these, you know, Julius Randle into the equation. I think that if they could add a guy like an Otto Porter or something like that, mm-hmm. The pieces might fit a little better. I just don't know. I mean, are you just saying, call the Celtics and say, we'll give you Anthony Davis now for Tatum? Like, I don't know.
Not right now. I'm just saying I think they needed things to go really, really well this year to kind of avoid the specter of that trade.
And I guess I'm saying I wouldn't give up on things still going well. Mm-hmm. I think they could still win 52-53 games if they just kind of got on a heater here. And the West is just really so wide open that all it really takes is 2 really good weeks.
And it isn't, though, because there is still the Warriors.
No, I mean, like, it's wide open for anyone to go get that mm-hmm. number 2 seed. Or even maybe the Warriors don't even get the number 1 seed. But, like, obviously nobody's winning the title if the Warriors are healthy. But it's wide open in the sense that people might look at you going into the playoffs as the second best team.
I know I've said this before, but I really cannot wait until we can just start talking about the league without having to drop this mandatory caveat of, well, we know the Warriors are winning the title. Like, that has framed the way that so many teams think now. You know, like, imagine if you just like took the Warriors out of the league, not even redistributed their players. Like, the Warriors are just non-existent. If you're the Pelicans, you're sitting there in ninth place in the West and thinking, like, we might win the title. What team would you pick to win the title out of the West right now? If it's not the Warriors, like, the Lakers would feel pretty good about it, right? Like, OKC might be in the finals. Who knows? And we're not that far from that being the case again, which is going to be really fun. Like,
well, actually, this actually takes me to one of my points. I think the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs will be clearly better than the second round of the Western Conference playoffs, and maybe even the third round of the Eastern Conference playoffs might be better than the third round of the Western Conference playoffs, just because I think, you know, 4 of the 5 or 6 best teams, or at least 4 of the 5 or 6 funnest teams to watch might be in the Eastern Conference. And I think that when the Warriors do kind of fall off, lose a guy, people start to slip out of their prime, I think those teams out East are better positioned to make a run at the finals than really any of the teams out West, barring the Lakers giving LeBron some help. So I'm just, you know, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Bucks, the Sixers, those 4 teams are just so damn good and so fun to watch. Like, I can't wait for the second round of those playoffs because, you know, I think home court's going to matter a ton. I think that obviously injuries are going to matter a ton, but any four of those teams could beat any of the other four, I think, in a seven-game series. Mm-hmm. So I'm just really jacked for that.
I had some variation of that on my list as well, and it was more of a take than an observation. But I think after the Warriors, the next four best teams, or maybe rather the teams with the highest ceiling, are all in the East.
I agree with that, actually.
Which is crazy to say,
yeah,
after how things have gone the last like 4 or 5 years. But I think Toronto, Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, at the very least, those teams are as good as Denver, OKC, Portland, and I think they're better.
I think all they are. I really do. I think that you're looking at teams with identities, teams with, like you said, really high ceilings, teams with fewer flaws than those teams out west. Like, all the teams we're talking about out west other than the Warriors just have these gaping flaws that I just don't know how they address. Right. And you could look at a team like the Sixers. I watched them play the other night, and like, you know, if they kind of that five-man unit with the big three, Redick and Wilson Chandler, like, I assume they're going to add someone like to give them better depth off the bench. I mean, they're going to need a little bit more shooting, but I mean, they could beat a lot of teams with that five-man unit. I mean, it's just so hard to score against them. It's mm-hmm. so hard to stop that level of talent when, like, Joel Embiid, I mean, he's just such a problem right now. And, you know, Ben Simmons has his flaws, but when he's surrounded with guys like Butler, Redick, and Embiid, it really makes it tough. So, yeah, those teams are so good. I mean, who do you think has the highest ceiling of those four, and who do you think has the lowest ceiling of those four?
Ooh. Highest ceiling to me, I mean, is it Philly just because of that top three? But then you make the argument, you get, like, look what happened in the playoffs last year. It's like Ben Simmons, like, literally ran into a wall and just, like, couldn't do anything.
Yeah, Ben Simmons playoff factor of him just not being able to shoot mm-hmm. and teams taking that away makes that tougher.
I think Boston might still have the highest ceiling.
I think I agree with that.
I think they have the deepest high-end talent. Milwaukee and Toronto are both deep, Toronto especially. But when they're, like, if you took 1 through 10 on all four of these teams, when all 10 of those players are at their best, which obviously doesn't happen in real life, but if they were, I think Boston's 10 are the best.
I think I agree with that. And I think the only reason it's a question right now is because of how bad some of Boston's key players have been.
Yeah.
But if those guys, I mean, there's so much season left to go. If those guys round into form, mm-hmm. I think that they are the team. I think the Bucks actually might have the lowest ceiling of that foursome, just because I think in the playoffs, like, it's not to the same extent as Simmons, but like Giannis's inability to shoot,
mm-hmm. And that's he's quietly regressed this year. It's not he's not that's, the same. He's gotten worse.
As someone who's watched a lot of Bucks games, I don't buy into him being the MVP at this point in the season at all. I think he was better for long stretches of last year.
He even said that last night after the game. He said he thought he was better last year than he's been this year.
I mean, maybe you could say he's been better defensively this year than he was last year, but like even that, I mean, I don't know how you really measure that.
He said he's been better in the restricted area. He hasn't really been doing anything outside the restricted area whatsoever.
And his free throw shooting's just a problem right now. I think they kind of play, I think, and this has been a case, this was a case with Budenholzer's Hawks teams too, is it's sort of a style that leads to a ton of wins in the regular season and can be exploited a little bit in the postseason. So mm-hmm. I think people should pump the brakes a little on saying the Bucks, like, you know, could make a run at the finals. I that would still really surprise me.
I think they would lose a series to Toronto if that's what it came down to.
So this kind of leads into one of my points. I'm getting, and I just talked about, I just said the word MVP, but I'm kind of getting sick of the amount of MVP chatter there is after 20 games in the season, because it's just like, what are we even talking about? Like I might say Joel Embiid's the MVP, but you know he's not going to win the MVP, because as the season goes on, like, the fact that he's surrounded by Butler and Ben Simmons, just, it's going to kind of negate that. The Pelicans are in a huge funk, so Anthony Davis isn't under consideration. I think Curry is the most valuable player, but he hasn't played enough to win. You just told me that LeBron James is playing the worst defense of his entire career, which is saying a lot. So I don't know how you give it to him. Like, I just think that it's just, I mean, it'd be like if we were just talking like if me and my wife were just looking at houses, even though we know we're not going to be able to buy a house for 4 years, if we were just breaking down houses and like which neighborhoods we like and stuff like that, it's like, what are we even talking about? So much can change between now and then. I don't mind it as much if people go into these long, detailed, sort of well thought out, like we're at the quarter point, we need to produce content. Here are some thoughtful reasons why this person might be the MVP so far. But just like the 30-second, Giannis is my MVP because, like, look at the Bucks. Like, it's just like, what's the point of that?
Totally agree. I mean, you know, I love discussing awards, but it's, even for me, it's a little too early. And it's very murky so far. I honestly think right now, like, if you took a straw poll right now, Curry wouldn't win it. But things are lining up if he stays healthy the rest of the way for him to win it, because his numbers are going to be awesome. His numbers were great before he got hurt. They were terrible for a little bit when he was hurt. And then if he comes back and they run away with the Western Conference, which I think they will, and he only misses like two or three games the rest of the way, I think he's going to win it.
Well, yeah, if he picks up where he left off before the injury, I think he should win it because he was just so good.
Lakers aren't going to be good enough. LeBron's numbers are going to look great, but their record won't be
enough. People will point out what you pointed out about LeBron's defense, where you can't give it to him when he's just not trying at all on that end. Yep. I think like it'll be interesting to look at how many games Kawhi Leonard plays at the end of the season. I mean, because I think the Raptors probably get the one seed out east, so he'll be in the mix.
You can cross off Kyrie.
But it's just debating, like I said, like debating MVP right now, there's like 12 candidates. Like I heard someone throw out Paul George the other day. It's like, are we going that deep, far down the ballot?
Okay, we can do a little bit of prospect stuff after this, but I'm just going to run through some of my fake trades and you can...
Well, let me just give you three stats that I wanted to point out really quick. So Derrick Rose is shooting 48.6% from three.
MVP.
Russell Westbrook is shooting 19.6% from three.
Yeah.
And remember in the preseason when, I know they're without their best player right now, but like remember in the preseason when everyone was talking about how the Bulls were going to score a ton of points but weren't going to be able to stop anyone? They have the second worst offense in the league right now.
Like second or third worst defense, right?
Probably. But like it's just those were three stats I came across that I thought were pretty hilarious. The Derrick Rose shooting almost 50% from 3-1 is just mind-boggling to me. I don't know what to do with that. I assume he finishes well below 40% at the end of the season, but pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, he we go back and kind of adjust some of our projections early on, and like we missed on him more than anybody. I think did. I take no responsibility. No. the Bulls, I got to watch them last night. They were playing the Bucks. I mean, it's like you throw this team together and it's exactly what you'd expect it would be, right? It's LaVine just like going off, doing his own thing, Jabari doing his own thing, Robin Lopez hustling, tapping out loose balls, doing what he does. Like everybody plays exactly the way you would expect they would when they're out there with these guys. And it's just, I feel bad for Fred Hoiberg, honestly.
That would not be a fun team to coach.
No, it's...
I feel bad for Wendell Carter. And I'm about to feel bad for Lauri Markkanen when
they're in the Suns territory where like a lot of the individual pieces in a vacuum you like. You're like, Zach LaVine's averaging over 25 points a game. Like Devin Booker is better than him, but there are some similarities there, certainly. You know, they have like Wendell Carter is really good, and it just has, for whatever reason, even though you like maybe four or five of the players on the Bulls more than you do anybody on the Hawks or anybody on the Knicks, it just doesn't coalesce and produce wins whatsoever.
Yeah, I think the Zach LaVine contract, a lot of people were kind of like, well, that actually might be a good contract, like when he got off to that hot start, and it's just like, you can't be, unless you can convince him to just be kind of a Klay Thompson type of low usage, high frequency 3-point shooter. I just don't know how you build a winning team around Zach LaVine.
I will say the way he was running some nice pick and rolls at the end of that game last night. They weren't finishing him, but he was not shooting as much as I thought. He is getting to the line over seven times a game. He does some good things. He's Zach LaVine is a Jabari Parker of shooting guards, and Jabari Parker is a Zach LaVine of forwards.
I've pushed back a little bit on that just because Zach LaVine can actually shoot, but
Jabari came out firing both times they played the Bucks. He's had it out for him.
Wow, revenge game.
Okay, fake trades. The Milwaukee Bucks trade John Henson in a future first round pick for Nick Vucevic.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's enough for Vucevic. It would take Orlando deciding that they don't want to bring him back.
I don't think Orlando would do that.
Expiring?
He's expiring. Is that that's what you're saying?
So you're assuming that they don't want him back.
So
who knows? He's playing really well.
You have a team with Brook Lopez and Nikola Vucevic.
Correct. Both play about 24 minutes. You don't have to deal with Henson. Vucevic has been like a top 20 player in the league.
I know. I just it's
he's going to be like one of the weirdest if they decide to trade him. Like what? I have no idea how to value him. Like this could be a severe lowball offer. Who knows?
I think I would do that if I were the Bucks, just because why, you know, why not? Who cares? Yeah. I can't imagine. I think the Magic are probably talking themselves into bringing Vucevic back on a multi-year deal.
I agree. I think knowing what we know about that organization, they're probably prepping the offer as we speak.
Like, what will he sign for, like, 4 years, 95?
Like, I think they're, like, frantically trying to get him on All-NBA so they can give him the Supermax. Yeah. I mean, Henson obviously isn't really the asset here. Like, I think you would probably have to be, like, a lightly protected first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this scenario, the Bucks see themselves as a contender, and it's like, okay, this is the piece that pushes us over Toronto. So that's my case.
Yeah, I guess, in a playoff series, you probably play Vucevic 26 minutes, Lopez like 22 minutes.
You don't have to play Thon at all.
Unless you're playing the Raptors, in which case you have to play him 48 minutes because that's the only team he's ever good at against.
Well, Boston last year. He had two good games against Boston in the playoffs.
Okay.
Markelle Fultz, could you trade him to the Bulls for Bobby Portis? Is Bobby Portis too good? He's currently injured. They have a million power forwards.
I think Bobby Portis is a bad basketball player, and therefore I would not cash Fultz out for him. Like I think that
cash out is a pretty strong word.
Look. I agree that they're not going to get anything notable back for Fultz at this point, but I still think I would like to think they could get something better than Bobby Portis back for him.
What about if you try to send him to Miami for a package centered around Wayne Ellington? Maybe you try to get them to throw in Rodney Magruder.
I would do that so fast. Okay.
I think that's probably available.
I would fall all over myself if I were the Sixers to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's 100. You could basically go and line up any team that has like a expiring wing. Jonathan Simmons for Orlando is
like,
somebody
I would take like a B-minus version of Wayne Ellington for Markelle Fultz.
Fair enough. Okay, that's probably Terrence Ross. Right. I already gave you my Aldridge Love blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
How about this one? You're going to hate this. I don't even know. This kind of works in the trade machine. I had to, you know, it's hard right now because some of these guys aren't eligible, so you can't really see how it works. The Portland Trailblazers send Damian Lillard, Al-Farouq Aminu, and a conditional first-round pick to the 76ers for Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, Wilson Chandler, Jonah Bolden, and the Dario Saric trade exception.
Wow, that's
so
a lot.
The big assets
a lot to
are,
take
are Lillard for Simmons, more or less, with filler.
Right. What's Lillard? He's under control for like three more years?
I believe so. Something I can verify that in a matter of seconds, but I think that's correct. He is under contract for two more seasons. But Simmons, you know, lost a year on his contract, so he's like kind of more further ahead than you'd think.
I think I would do that if I were the 76ers. Now for the Blazers. I don't know. I like the idea of those two being a centerpiece in a trade. Lillard, Embiid, Butler would be such a fun big three. And that's a big three that has a crazy high ceiling in the postseason. Because, I mean, Lillard obviously is, after Steph, probably the next best off-the-dribble shooter in the league and causes sort of 80%, 75% of the issues, the spacing issues that Steph causes. And then Embiid and Butler being the guy you just put on the other team's best player to defend. I mean, that would be really, really fun.
Okay, so the final decision is it would be fun. Who says no? Does either team say no?
I think both teams might say no.
Yeah, I think it's like too much of a PR risk.
Yeah, because you're the Blazers, you're giving away like the player that all your fans are just falling in love with. and you're taking a risk on a guy that may never be able to shoot, and things are going pretty well for them, you know, reasonably well for them.
Yeah, for this to happen, I think something went, like, both teams would almost have to be sliding.
I think the Sixers might be more likely to want to do it if internally they have, they're just terrified of Ben Simmons' long-term ability to shoot. Mm-hmm. They might just be down to cash that out right now. So,
yeah.
I guess it's a tougher sell. I get, like, sell me on why the Blazers should do it.
I think, like I said, they would probably have to lose like 8 out of 11 games and just kind of be forced into something. Damian Lillard maybe gives you some sort of indication that he's unhappy. Mm-hmm. The Lillard-McCollum backcourt can't work. Chatter has been going on for like mm-hmm. 2+ years. Maybe you're weirdly intrigued by Fultz, who's, you know, kind of the secondary part of this. I don't know. I mean, and then in theory, you know, you get Simmons for longer. You know, mm-hmm. you re-sign him and, you know, he's just your guy going forward.
I think the NBA would be a much more interesting place if that trade happened.
Okay.
Like, same thing
that's
with
all,
the
that's
Love.
That's all I'm really trying to do.
Same thing with the Love and the Aldridge one.
Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier to the Phoenix Suns for TJ Warren, Mikal Bridges, and Ryan Anderson's contract.
I think Boston would strongly consider that.
I think the
Celtics might view Hayward's contract as a bad contract.
How I view it. When I was making these trades, I'm under the assumption that they're like low key trying to dump that money. He has $32.7 million next year and a $34 million player option for the year after. Ryan Anderson's making.
I think
a
he's going to pick that up.
I think so too. Ryan Anderson's making about 20 this year, but that drops down to 15 next year. So you're saving essentially that final year of $34 million.
So do you think Phoenix would do that today, or do you think you need to wait for Hayward to have like a good 3-week stretch before Phoenix would do that?
I think Phoenix specifically, given the circumstances, would do it because they were desperate. A good team probably wouldn't want Hayward, but they would want the star power.
Right.
He's only under contract for 2 more years. It's a lot of money, but for a team like Phoenix that doesn't have all that much committed, like, it's not the end of the world.
The Celtics are...
And you get Rozier.
The rarest of rare spots where I think TJ Warren could be a winning player just based on their ability to basically have an awesome defense no matter who's out there. Right. And, TJ Warren's probably better than Gordon Hayward right now.
The numbers absolutely bear that out. He's way better.
And I love Mikal Bridges. Like, I like Mikal Bridges probably more as a long-term asset than I like Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. So, and that just gives you an extra asset to kind of throw in a Anthony Davis trade.
Exactly. I like the way you're thinking, because you're losing Rozier for nothing otherwise.
Yeah, you're giving Kyrie the max, and this allows you to kind of get some long-term money off the books for an ideal Anthony Davis and Jason Tatum max.
Yep.
So
this is the deal that I thought, not this specific deal, but I thought they should have traded Hayward before the season.
Right.
But it would have been indefensible from a PR standpoint mm-hmm. back then. But now he's played bad enough that, like, I think people would be like, wow, that was heartless, but man, he's really bad. So this is actually kind of good. You know, like, I really think he's been bad enough that you could sell it to the fan base.
Yeah.
I also thought you could do Hayward for Vucevic in the Mozgov contract, similar deal where you have to pay Mozgov next year, but you don't get that $34 million Hayward poison pill in 2 years.
I just would, if I were the Celtics, I would prefer to get something else back.
I agree. And you also need a desperate team to take Hayward, and so, unless he shows that he can come back.
I think that if you act soon enough, you just need a dumb team like the Suns. Right. You don't need a desperate team. You just need a dumb team.
I think
team.
They're dumb and desperate.
Yeah, right.
Ideally, you can have both, which that's what the Phoenix Suns offer.
Right.
Okay, a couple more. John Wall, Thomas Satoransky to Phoenix for Ryan Anderson, Josh Jackson, Elie Okobo, and a first-round pick.
I think that Washington would love to do this.
I think Phoenix would love to do this.
You really think they'd?
I think Robert Sarver would love
that,
to do this.
If
John Wall was on their team, they would pay him that, right?
I mean, you, Sarver, I just, you never know. I mean, maybe he would. That's a really, really bad contract.
Sure is. Suns are desperate to be good.
Getting a first round pick from this Suns team.
The Clippers got a first rounder from Detroit. That's kind of where I threw
yeah.
that in.
I mean, that's just, that would be such a heist.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be a 2019 first.
Whenever it is. I mean, you never know when the Suns team might be terrible.
Yeah, I guess maybe so. You want it to be 2019. Like, I don't know. Maybe they'll be good enough for it to not be one.
You could tell me they have the worst record in the league any yeah. of the next, like, 10 years, and I'd be like, that right. makes sense. Yeah.
It's tough to make a case for why Phoenix does it. I agree. But you guys well, just kind of have to.
So you with Phoenix, yeah, you're not making a case for, like, this is why it makes sense. You're making a case for this is why they might think it makes sense, right? So yes. I get it. I think that they would have a marketable big three that they could take to their fans and say, you know, this is our core of the future.
You get out from that Anderson contract.
Look, that would be really, really fun to just watch John Wall and DeAndre Ayton run pick and rolls and to, you know, have Booker sitting, you know, in the corner to bomb threes off of John Wall's penetration and stuff like that. I think it'd be cool. But, yeah, I mean, I just can't imagine Washington getting an asset back in that trade. But it's fun to think about.
Yeah, well, I mean, the asset in this case is Josh Jackson, who looks like he's really bad. Eli Okobo, who maybe is good. I don't know, he was good last night. They played him like 32 minutes.
Well, who's a better asset, Eli Okobo or Josh Jackson?
I think Eli Okobo.
Yeah, me too.
dude's played like three games.
Josh Jackson might be a bad contract at this point.
Yeah, fourth overall, you're not making peanuts. Okay, last one. John Wall, Austin Rivers, and the best-looking man in the NBA, Kelly Oubre, for Aaron Gordon and the Timofey Mozgov deal. Maybe you got to add a pick if you're Washington, but I think Orlando is in that same spot where they're desperate for something. The Aaron Gordon deal isn't looking great.
That one's interesting. Yeah, I don't know if they would have to add a pick because, you know, getting a Mozgov deal included and the like Aaron Gordon's deal is kind of in the same camp as the Gordon Hayward yep. deal where it probably looks like a not such a great deal at this point. That might be enough bad money going back that you roll the dice if you're the Magic because and you could talk yourself into like John Wall plus Vucevic plus you hope that Isaac and Bamba look way better than they do right now. But like, I mean, they don't look good right now, but yeah, you could maybe talk yourself into that if you're the Magic.
Yeah. I mean, you could go Wall, Oubre, Isaac, Vooch, Bamba. That's not a playoff starting five in my opinion, but it's an okay starting five. And well, you're probably getting another lottery pick this year.
Would it be better than the Wizards starting five after that deal?
Probably.
I think it would be. Yeah.
Maybe you bring back Dwight. I don't know. I mean, it's not the worst. Like, I think the issue is that the Wall deal, like, we can say, like, the Gordon deal is not looking great. He's like he's a pretty good player. You know, he has nights where he looks like a great player. Mm-hmm. The John Wall deal is that much worse money-wise that I think that probably stops Orlando from doing it because I believe you only have one more year of Mozgov. So it's not the albatross that the Wall deal might be, but all it takes is one team out there who still thinks John Wall is good. And I think the fact that Blake Griffin looks really, really good right now, I still think that was a good trade for the Clippers. You know, we talked about this right. a little bit kind of before
well,
the podcast.
So
but.
I don't want to make it seem like I think John Wall is a just horrible, horrible player. I just think that, you know, if I would want to be paying him like $15 million a year.
Yeah.
And he's getting paid like almost three times that much.
As I've said multiple times, the Supermax has not been what the NBA thought it would be. It is very much worth it for about eight players in the league.
Yeah.
Most of those players don't want it because they want the freedom
right.
to move around. Like Kevin Durant, LeBron yeah. James, Anthony Davis should all be Supermax guys, but they don't want the Supermax because they'd rather just sign one-year deals and just make up that money elsewhere. The guys who are getting it are John Wall. And
They're
not worth it.
Accidentally kind of introduced this poison pill that is allowing NBA teams to sign worse deals than they were ever capable
of. And you're obligated to get, like, if John Wall is eligible for it and you're the Wizards, you have to offer it to him, because if not, then it's a slap in the face. Like, it has not had the consequences that it was intended to have.
No.
Regardless. No matter how you view it, like, it's been...
It was a mistake.
Yes. Like, I mean, look at... Most teams are just trading their guys that are going to become eligible for it. Like, the Bulls didn't want to pay Jimmy Butler, so they traded him. The Kings traded DeMarcus Cousins, so they didn't even have to give him that money. Right. The guys who are becoming eligible for it, like, somehow the standards need to be raised.
The Spurs didn't want to give it to Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
Like,
which at the time, given the injury and the circumstance, kind of made more sense. Obviously, now you'd want that. But the way that players are moving around, like, nobody wants to be committed that long. Mm-hmm. And the players that do are guys that know they can't make that much money elsewhere, so they just take the Supermax, and it immediately... John Wall isn't even making that much money yet. The Supermax doesn't even kick in until next
year. I
think,
the closest example of it working as intended is Russell Westbrook, where...
Sure. That was such a special service.
He probably leaves OKC if he can get the same money from a different team. But I would even argue that that's not going to be a good... It might already not be a good contract. It's definitely not going to be one in, like, 2 years. So, I hadn't really... I mean, I sort of realized in my head that it hadn't been working as intended, but I guess I didn't realize just to the extent that it has been a utter disaster for the league.
Other than Westbrook, like you said, that's a really good point. That is exactly how it's supposed to work, where a team like Oklahoma City, the Supermax was intended to protect small market teams from losing guys like Westbrook, and it worked. But people thought he was going to turn it down, remember? Like, they thought he would say no. So,
that was a case where it worked perfectly, but...
What it's supposed to do is you're paying off a player. You're paying him so much more than he's worth that he can't leave, because nobody would be foolish enough to turn down that money.
But
that's not a good way to go about it.
Like, what you don't want, if you're the league, is a bunch of podcasts and a bunch of articles about how this player who's supposed to be a face of a franchise is... not even close to worth his contract. So then it's just all this sort of negative chatter about John Wall instead of, like, if John Wall was just on a contract that was commensurate with how good he is, like, everyone would love him.
No,
you know?
There'd be no problem. Like, he really hasn't done anything to like provoke any of this. You know, he can be a little bit bristly sometimes, I guess, but a lot of, like, so is Russ and nobody talks about him like that. But no, I mean, I do think this is a discussion wholly for another podcast, but, like, the Warriors are also a part of this, because the Warriors have devalued all of these, like, tier two stars, where it makes you look at a guy in a Supermax and you say, like, is this guy good enough to lead us to beat the Warriors? And if the answer is no, then all of a sudden it becomes a bad contract.
Right.
Okay. A couple quick prospect notes before we head out. Ja Morant. A lot of casual NBA fans, casual draft followers, casual college basketball fans probably don't know who Ja Morant is. He is now going to be the third Murray State point guard who's been, like, a legitimate draft prospect in these last few years. Isaiah Cannon, of course, and Cam Payne. I have seen enough already to say that he's probably better than those two guys.
His government name is Demetrius, so if you're trying to look him up on, like, College Basketball Reference, you're gonna have to either just type in his last name. You're not gonna get anything if you type in Ja Morant, but you will get stuff on YouTube if you type in Ja Morant. And
that's J-A.
Like the legendary rapper Ja Rule. So, he's really good. He's going to be, I think, the first true point guard off the board in the upcoming draft. I think that that's pretty safe to say, especially with Darius Garland's injury. Do you think he... So I kind of get some vibes that maybe he's a guy that... One of those point guards that's just a, you know, sort of a Colin Sexton type, where, like, he could... be really fun to watch, put up some pretty cool stats, and maybe just usually be on bad teams? Or do you think he could be, like, do you think when the draft comes around you're going to like Ja Morant more than you liked Colin Sexton in this past draft, is I guess what I'm asking.
I think so, yes. I mean, he's playing for Murray State, which is in the Ohio Valley, so it's a little bit different than playing in the SEC like Sexton did numbers-wise. But, I mean, through four games, he's averaging 28 points, 9 assists, 7.5 rebounds, 2 steals. He is shooting 58% from the floor, 35% from three. If you watch his highlights, these are not just like...
Yeah.
These are long
the
NBA
key,
type of
the
threes.
Key number for me is the 3-point shooting, because he's a crazy athlete and he has the tools to be a really good defender. He's almost averaging a block a game too. Mm-hmm. And he's 6'5", 6'6"?
They list College Basketball Reference has him at 6'3", 170, but I don't know.
He looks taller than that. But, like, yeah, so maybe 6'3", maybe, like, 6'4 and a half. I mean, who knows? But, like, he's a good-sized point guard. He's going to be able to guard ones. He's going to be able to guard some twos. And he's got good handles. He's going to be able to get to the rack. He's going to be a good pick-and-roll point guard.
That's an incredible name.
Yeah.
The
question is just, what does he shoot from three? And that, I think, is going to be a big determining factor on how successful he is in the NBA, but so far so good. And given the lack of, you know, true primary ball handlers in this draft after RJ Barrett, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes like 6th, 7th, 8th, sure. Something like that. So
I agree. Well, especially, you know, we talked about that 2017 class as like one of the best point guard classes ever. And, you know, as we talked about like 40 minutes ago, that may not be the case. Some of those same teams might be looking for point guards. So like all like the point guard position looked like almost everybody in the league had a point guard. Yeah. And all of a sudden now there's like five or six teams.
Everyone whiffed on the point guards they drafted. Like, all the other ones. Need another one.
The greatest point guard class ever turned out to not be so good. So there are teams out there, and I think, you know, this helps him in the same way that it kind of helped Ayton last year, is that like it just wasn't a great big man draft, and this is not a great point guard draft. So I think that probably bumps him up 3-4 spots. You know, a team that really needs a point guard, kind of like the Kings really wanted a big man in Bagley last year, you know, pay up for that because they think they're already set at a different position.
And I think history has sort of taught us that sometimes the steal from the draft is a guy that didn't go to a power conference, like sometimes like Kawhi Leonard, Paul George,
Lillard.
There's lots of examples of like the best pick from the draft just value wise was a guy that went to a small school that people were a little worried about just based on the level of competition. So, you know, if it's taking a guy like Romeo Langford or taking a guy like John Morant, I think there are teams that might lean for Morant. So I think he's definitely a guy to try to watch. I don't know how easy it will be to watch him, but maybe just watch his highlights. He's really cool.
40% usage rate so far, which is kind of fun. Yeah. That's actually fairly sustainable, I think. All right, anyone else you want to touch on? I know Rui Hachimura looked really good in Maui.
Is it an overreaction to put him kind of in that like 5 to 7 range?
No, I think he could go. I don't think I wouldn't take him over. He's not, definitely not in the Zion Barrett category by any means. But yeah, no, somewhere between 3 and 10 right now.
Yeah, I think that game really answered a lot of the questions I had just about his eventual position. Because I sort of felt like he might just be too undersized to be a 5 even in today's NBA. And if he's not a 5, I don't see him guarding a lot of 4s. So it's just, can he play the 5? And, you know, I think he could on some teams. So, you know, his shot looks pretty good. He's got good post moves, good size, or good length, I should say. So, yeah, I think he was really impressive in that game. And that was a huge game for him because if he had been bad in that game, he probably falls out of the lottery. Yes. And now that he's good in that game, a lot of scouts just aren't going to worry about seeing him.
Yeah, he can just be bad throughout the whole West Coast Conference season now.
Nobody would be able to tell because he'll still put up good numbers.
Yeah, he just needs to show up again in the tournament and he'll be fine. Last guy I want to hit on, we'll probably launch a separate podcast on Bol Bol, but DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. If you get a chance, I mean, I know Virginia is like not super appealing to watch, but this is a pretty fun Virginia team by their standards. Kyle Guy is really fun. DeAndre Hunter looks like an NBA player playing for Virginia, which is especially jarring just because he just doesn't fit that archetype whatsoever. I don't know a ton about him. He was hurt at the end of last season. He didn't play for them in the tournament. I will remind you that they did lose to a 16 seed. But he looks to me like somebody who's solidly going to be in the probably mid to late lottery. Maybe it falls back into the mid first round. I don't know.
He's going to go, you know, at worst in the mid teens just because of his size. Cause he's a 6'7" guy that theoretically could guard.
He looks bigger than 6'7" too.
Yeah. I mean, he can guard several positions. He can shoot it, you know, kind of a little bit of a different players, but sort of the McCall Bridges of this class where he's the upperclassman that for a, you know, team that's going to be a 1 or 2 seed who actually has a game that translates to the NBA. So, yeah, he's
big time athlete.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. that'll wrap it up. Do you have anything on the site that you want to plug? Any baseball stuff? I saw you wrote about the Padres. That was actually the first thing I read when I woke up this morning.
Oh, wow, yeah.
James Anderson railing against Twitter.
Good call.
For calling you out on these fake Padres.
Yeah, look. Trades. Look, Padres fans. I had to give you a dose of reality. Check that out on the site if you think you can handle it. But yeah, nothing else other than that.